Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Craig Burley, Don Hutchison and Stevie Nicol will be here to reflect on that goalless draw in the Merseyside derby. We start, though, in La Liga as Real Madrid are now top of the Spanish league after a 2-1 victory over Real Sociedad today. To reflect on it, though, because, boy, was it controversial. Gab Marcotti and Frank Leboeuf with us. Boys, let's get straight to the big talking point that seems to have divided not only Spain, but the world. Was it a handball in the build-up for the Benzema goal? Frank Leboeuf.
Hard to see from a certain angle. Let's say from the front angle, you don't see. You even see that the ball seemed to touch the chest of Benzema. From the side, you barely see that he touched the handball, the arm. But from behind, we saw only once. For me, it's a clear handball. Now you have to define where the arm starts or the handball starts when he touches the arm. And he touches right there on mm-hmm. the lower shoulder. And even Benzema, after the goal, showed it. And it's, for me, it's handball. So it shouldn't be allowed. And Real Madrid should have drew.
Benzema lifted up his sleeve, didn't he, Gab, to kind of show, which doesn't really help because you couldn't really tell which bit he'd hit of the sleeve. Where do you stand on this?
Like Frank, I was confused. I was sure it was a handball. Then I saw the replay from one angle, and then I wasn't sure. I genuinely don't know. It could have gone either way. I'm assuming the VAR would have had access to all the replays, including the one from behind the goal that Frank referenced. And I think, you know, while they clarified the rule for next season, sort of trying to define where the shoulder ends and the arm starts, it's still frankly clear as mud, and I suspect that's why VAR did not overturn it.
Now, a lot of people were tweeting in and say, well, surely the referee, given it was so contentious, should have been told to go over to the monitor just to have another look, Gab.
Yeah, you know what? And this is something I think that's really, really important. The referee, I mean, this is more in the execution of VAR, but the referee taking ownership of decisions like this one, because there is a fair degree of discretion under the current rules still. It's not as simple as the arm and so on. And remember, the IFAB did offer more specific guidelines, but it's not an exact science. And I'm frankly surprised that didn't happen.
Just a reminder, from the start of next season, implemented across Europe, it will be the sleeve line that will be the defining factor. And of course, you take a look at that, and then that would definitely mean that Benzema's goal was 100% the correct call. But the thing is, and what's fueled all of this kind of talk and speculation, as we mentioned, this proved to be the winning goal. But after Gerard Piqué's comments as well, after the goalless draw against Sevilla, almost handing the title to Real Madrid, suggesting that maybe other factors were at play, we saw some other big calls as well. Yanisai with a goal which was disallowed because of the offside player in front of Courtois. Was that the right call in your opinion, Frank?
Yeah, I think it's the right call. The player is offside. Now the question is, was he blinding Courtois or not on the start the shot of the player? And yes, I think he did. I think Courtois didn't see the beginning of the shot or the shot itself, and it's why the referee was right deciding to disallowing the goal.
Gap.
So the definition is interfering with an opponent, either simply by standing there or by making some sort of movement towards the ball. And I think not only is he in his way, he also makes a slight movement one way, which could have thrown Courtois off. I have to ask, entirely unnecessary, because there's no way Courtois was getting to save that shot.
You want more controversy? You got it. We'll rewind, shall we, to the Real Madrid penalty that Sergio Ramos converted. Vinicius Jr. going down. Was there enough contact? Was there even contact there, Frank, in your opinion?
Yes, there is a movement from the defender who put, in fact, his leg between the attacking leg and the ball without touching the ball, without kicking the ball away. So it's a kind of obstruction, and it's a voluntary obstruction. So for me, it's a penalty. You know, yesterday I was talking about Pogba, mm-hmm. or whether it was a penalty or not. I think it's nothing that Vinicius does bad. He wants to kick the ball, but the players, the defender, put his leg one more time in between the ball and the leg of Vinicius, and Vinicius hit the leg of the defender. So there is a penalty.
You concur, Gab?
I think it's what you call a soft penalty, in the sense that some referees might not have given it, but equally, Frank's absolutely right. When the defender comes across like that, as a striker, you have to take evasive action or you run into them. And that's kind of what happened on this occasion. I don't know, you know, what else Vinicius could have frankly done, and was his chance at goal damaged? Yeah, absolutely.
Right, away from the controversial cause, let's just talk about the game overall. And once again, Frank, Karim Benzema is the hero for Real Madrid. I think you can put up a very, very strong argument that him and Robert Lewandowski are the two best players in the world at this very moment. After this break, they've both come back, they've both hit the ground running. And if Real Madrid are going to go and win this title, it's because of Benzema.
Yes, he's a second top scorer in La Liga behind Messi, and he's absolutely fantastic. The goal that he scored the last game is a pure beauty, and what he does, even if we can contest the fact that it was a handball, because it was a handball, it's the movement, what he does, the ways he turns, shows that he's already fit. Where we can see that some players are still finding their fitness. He's already there. He's already at the top, and he shows it every game that he plays. So he's at his best of his career, and he's been a long time like that. He's a fantastic player, there's no doubt about that. And he deserves to be the striker of Real Madrid and maybe the best striker in the world.
Did Zidane get away with it a bit today? Gab, obviously, likes of James was starting, he made quite a few changes. Hazard on the bench, Real Madrid not as good as they were, for example, in the second half against Valencia.
Yeah, I think in some ways possibly he did. I mean, he didn't in the sense that they won the game, but, you know, I don't have an issue with the idea of rotating your squad. But again, when you saw late in the game the way things were turning, you know, I'm surprised he didn't make some substitutions earlier, in particular Ferland Mendy for Marcelo at that stage of the game. Not that Marcelo played badly. You know, the James experiment, you want to get him back in, you want to use your whole depth. You know, I get it, but equally, you know, there are times when you need to perhaps cover up a little bit, try something different, especially that whole spell where James kept coming over to the same size as Vinicius. So I think there are little things that I think with hindsight, Zidane might say, well, I could have done them differently, but it's all right. We got the 3 points. We're ahead.
And a huge relief for Real Madrid, given they were playing second in this round of matches, Frank. They knew that Barcelona had dropped points. They knew this was their chance to go level at the top of the table. It is a chance that they've taken. And what it sets up, and what's great for us just who love watching football, is that the remaining matches are going to be fascinating because this is going to be a real tête-à-tête.
Yeah, exactly, and we want to see that because in the Premier League we know that Liverpool is going to be the champion. In Bundesliga, it's the same, but we have a fight in Spain, and it's very interesting to see what's going to happen between the two bigs in La Liga, and that nothing is going to be over until the end, because I guess they're going to keep on winning and winning games, and who's going to drop maybe 2 points with the draw before the end of La Liga, that nobody has an answer, because they are of course two fantastic teams, and they're going to fight until the end.
It'd be the old cliche, won't it, Gab? With 8 matches to go, we've got 8 finals. We've got to treat every game as the next big one. But for us, that's what we want to see. And of course, it's just going to be an explosion of controversy after these refereeing decisions, depending if you're reading Catalan newspapers or Madrid-based ones.
Yeah, and it's going to be a turning of the screws. And I think the one thing, you know, we've seen this before. The one thing we won't see, I think, is too much head-to-head sniping between the two managers, Kike Setién and Zinedine Zidane. It's just not in their personality. So I think the question is, how are the players going to react? It's really going to be, I think, the media, you know, stoking this. I'll be curious to see if Sergio Ramos responds to his frenemy, Gerard Piqué. But I'll tell you what, Dan, I think I don't believe that we're going to see these teams rattle off 8 wins in a row. I think there's more twists and turns to come. I think we're seeing these games, they've been so close, most of these games since they came back. Even like Barcelona's big win, you know, against Mallorca, it didn't, it's big on paper, but not in terms of what we saw on the pitch. So, don't be surprised if the league changes hands, you know, again, between now and the end of the season. I don't think these teams are going to run the table.
Just a reminder, there'll be a lot more discussion about this, plus all the other big talking points that happen in Europe over the weekend on the next edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That drops on Monday. I've heard rumours their special guest is Frank LaBeouf. Must be desperate.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day.
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Meanwhile, in England, Liverpool one step closer to winning the title after a goalless draw at Goodison Park against Everton in the Merseyside derby. Goodness me, this was a tough watch. Don, Stevie and Craig with me. Craig, did you manage to stay awake through it all?
Actually, I did have a little nod during the first half. I had to give myself a little bit of a slap. But, you know, listen, from Everton's perspective, I think they'll be quite pleased because that's what they are under Ancelotti in this current squad, quite compact, with a couple of big physical guys up front, particularly Calvert-Lewin, who run the channel. And we saw that towards the end of the game when they looked more likely to score. But I'm kind of thinking about it in a way, and I think it's more difficult for the really expansive teams to cut, like Liverpool, like City and one or two others, to come back flying after the break rather than a team that just, you know, works on its shape and keeps itself compact. So I think we saw that with Liverpool today, that clearly they were a long way off what we saw just before the lockdown. And, you know, in the end, Everton were relatively comfortable.
Stevie?
I think both managers will be happy with the point. You know, you're always hoping that the first game back that you will be sharp and you pray you will. But if you're realistic, there's no way that you can be. So both managers will be happy. You know, it's the first time ever. And listen, I've played in some horrible derbies between Liverpool and Everton. But at least there was always an edge. There wasn't even an edge to this. And that made it painful to watch. I mean, I'm sitting watching it, and it reminded me of pre-season when the first team played against the reserves. And the first team were better, but couldn't quite get it done. That's exactly what I thought this game was. So both teams will be happy. They both got a point. Nobody lost.
Done.
I can't really add too much to what the boys said. I mean, it wasn't a great game. Did we expect anything different? The last two games at Goodison have both been 0-0. So it was never going to be a classic. And as the lads have explained, when you're trying to come back from over 102 days away from football, they were never, ever going to be flying into their shape, into their style. Liverpool, I thought, started the better. They looked as though they were sharp. I thought Minamino looked sharp. But in the end, I think the second half, with the injuries that Liverpool had and Jurgen Klopp had, you had to make a lot of changes, which disrupted the game. And once you got to an hour, you just thought, this is the banker, 0-0.
I was watching this, though, Dan, and I thought, you know, nothing's changed for Stevie, because this game never really became exciting till Dejan Lovren come on. And it's like, you know, as day as night follows day, he's got to be sitting in his house shouting Lovren when he come on, because he was just getting himself in the wrong positions again.
The fact that I'm now going to talk about water breaks tells you exactly what happened during the 90 minutes of this game. Do we need them, Craig? It's Liverpool and it was 50 degrees.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I get it. I've seen it on social media. If we're going to get angry about water breaks, we might as well pack in. You know, at the end of the day, it's not the heat. It's the rehydrating. And it's because there's going to be so many games in such a short period of time. Look, do I think they could do without it? Absolutely. But I'm not going to sit there nutting my head on the wall because players are having a water break on 22 minutes. It's the mollycoddled, cotton wool wrap player these days. Everything has to be right. So it's a bit of a pain, but I'm not... Daniel, I get angry about lots of things, as you know.
Yes.
But I'm really not...
I do know. I do know indeed.
But I'm not fussed.
No.
No. We've got empty stadiums. We've got crowd noise getting pumped in. Everybody's trying their best. If you're getting angry about a water break, you need to get out more, son.
Hey, you're softening, Craig. Stevie, are you as apathetic about water breaks?
I couldn't care less. I love hearing all the nonsense that, oh, this is great, the coaches love it, and they can do this, and they can get the tactics and all this. What? That's a lot of nonsense. Players, half of them are not even listening.
Oh. By the way, why are you holding your fucking
ticket, Stevie?
Oh, because it's the only way I can hear you.
But it's plugged in. If you've not got somewhere, you can just put it down.
How do you think I hear you? Well, how do you think I hear you?
Yes, but you don't need
to
hold it.
I got all excited and lifted my hands.
Here we go.
So the game's rubbish, so you're going to try and be clever now. Yeah, I'll tell you what I'll do. If I don't hold it, it'll pop out, because this is not long enough. I don't have a table that I can put it on either. So I've got it in my hand. Is that okay?
He thinks it makes him look like intelligent, Dan, or something, if you just sort of wave it about in front of your face rather than put it in your pocket.
Don, meanwhile, is constantly holding his phone just waiting for a text from Frank Lampard. That's just normal, whether he's on the show or not. That's it.
I've just had the longest day ever, and we're now talking about the length of Stevie Nicks' cable.
Hey, listen. Is it just me? You know what's more galling than the water breaks is having to listen to, oh, well, you know, if Liverpool get a point here and Man City, oh, it might not happen. It's probably not going to happen. But if Man City lose or drop points against Burnley, not going to happen. But I'm just telling you anyway, then Liverpool are going to win the league on this date at 11 a.m. and 54 seconds. They're going to win the league anyway. We don't need to know. It's like it's a foregone conclusion. So we don't need to know when they're going to win the league. They're going to win the league.
Let's move on, shall we? Chelsea came from behind to beat Aston Villa by 2-1. Villa 1-0 up. Christian Pulisic then coming on to score the equaliser. Olivier Giroud, a surprise starter, getting the second. Don, is this where you tell us that you spoke to Frank Lampard about Christian Pulisic at the UEFA Super Cup final?
Yeah, me and Frank have been chatting for weeks on end. We've been texting left, right and centre. I've told him about Pulisic. He's different class. Listen, I thought Chelsea absolutely battered Aston Villa, and I was so surprised at Aston Villa's tactics in the game, where they drew 0-0 the other day against Sheffield United in a must-win game, and then Chelsea come, and they were so deep, and all of a sudden they scored before half-time, and in the second half they just went so deep trying to hang on. They are not convincing me, Aston Villa, that they've got a chance of getting out of the bottom three. They are really struggling, and Chelsea... all of a sudden has become fashionable. Everyone loves Chelsea all of a sudden. And I'm telling you, if he sticks with Christian Pulisic, which is going to be hard because I hear that Frank thinks he's a little bit shy, so he needs to do more, then they are building some side with Timo Werner and Hakim Ziyech next season.
I hear that Frank thinks he's a little bit shy. How do you make him less shy?
He's shy. He needs to come out of his shell. He's an unbelievable player, but he needs to do more.
Are you actually here, Don, or is that on a record from like 4 months ago when you said Frank Lampard said that Pulisic was shy and needs to come out of his shell? You're going to have to get another line. Listen. If I was a Chelsea fan, though, I mean, the Achilles heel for Chelsea is the batter teams and don't kill the game off, right? That's been one of the problems up to this point this season, and it looked kind of like it again for a long period. That being said, if you're a Chelsea fan, you're super excited about some of the players that Don mentioned, the options Frank Lampard's got. The Loftus-Cheek playing further up didn't quite work, but he can do it. But he's been out for a long time with injury, the lad, so he's rusty, but he plays better from a deeper position. But when you add in the fact that you've got Tammy Abraham, physicality, you've got Giroud, years extra contract, option. Timo Werner coming in, Hudson-Odoi to come back into the team. Mason Mount can play in several positions, as can Pulisic coming off the bench. Exciting going forward. That is a lot to look forward to if you're a Chelsea fan. Is it going to be enough next year? We don't know. But that will pile extra pressure on Frank Lampard, because when you look at that team, you think, wow, they're going to be super to watch. And now it's going to be up to him to mould them into something that's going to challenge the big guys at the top.
Stevie, as a coach, how do you improve shyness?
I've got no idea. Not a clue. You're a psychologist, not a coach. Listen, Chelsea's biggest problem, I think, is not going forward. It's defensively. I mean, they're going to create chances and put teams under pressure all day long, every single time they step on the field, regardless of the opposition. But I'll tell you what, they give me a heart attack at the back. I mean, they go a goal down. Okay, it's a fantastic ball in behind, but there's a couple, maybe even three Aston Villa players, any which one of them could have put the ball in the net. And then they get ahead, and then the mistakes. I mean, Rudiger is so lucky. Tried to play a back pass, completely missed it. Ended up nothing happened. And then Aston Villa could equalise with, what, seven minutes to go? Christensen made a mess of a clearance, a simple clearance. So, listen, I'm with the boys as far as attacking's going. Yes, they could do with putting teams away, but they will create chances, no question. But they have to do something defensively to shut the shop up.
And I tell you, Dan, the other thing is as well, Spanish goalkeepers are the theme at the moment. We were talking about De Gea after the Man United Tottenham game, and he came in for a lot of stick and a lot of it from us, and I think deservedly so. And he's going to be looked at closely by Solskjaer and the fans. There's not a doubt about it. Same can be said. Kepa didn't think he did brilliantly with the first effort that he palmed out. It came straight to him. Some might say it came a little bit quick, but I don't think Lampard will see it that way. I think he'll see it as another mistake from a guy who he's considered before the lockdown a little bit of a liability. Now, this is an issue. As Stevie said, defensively, they've looked a bit iffy, and when that happens, you need to have a rock-solid goalkeeper behind you. And I don't think the Chelsea manager believes he's got that.
Don, looking at those eight remaining matches, how much of it is kind of a shot window now for those players looking to book a place in the starting 11 or indeed the squad next season with the new personnel coming in?
Yeah, it's going to be a test, but that's what you want. When you're playing for top sides, you want to be tested. Tammy Abraham's took a knock today. He didn't play, so his confidence will be dented slightly, but he's got to respond. It looks as though Giroud is Frank Lampard's trusted number nine for what he does to the team and what he does to the midfield players and the wide players in and around him. So I think when you're Chelsea, when you're pushing for all the domestic trophies in the league, potentially Champions League next season, you are going to need a bigger squad. And I don't think Tammy Abraham's the finished article. I think he's a fine young player, but he needs a little bit more to his game when he matures. So I can only applaud Frank, because what he's trying to do is trying to put his own stamp on this Chelsea side. And I agree with Stevie, really. When they do go ahead, they don't finish games. They don't control games, neither. They missed Jorginho today, and he's one that could control the tempo of a game. And unless they get two or three clear, they still give you a few flutters, Chelsea, defensively.
Don applauds Frank Lampard's shocker. Stevie, what's it like when you've got all of these players vying for these places? What's the dynamic like in training every day?
It's great, because everybody, every single time they get a chance to show up, they do it. You know, competition, everybody says competition is great for any team, and that's why. Because not only when a player steps on the field on a Saturday or a Wednesday, whatever day the game is, but every day in training, you have to show something to the manager that says, you need to play me. You know, you can't go in and mope around and stick your head between your legs, because if you do that, you definitely won't get a game. So listen, I'll bet the five-a-side matches they have in training are pretty quick and pretty sharp, and everybody's getting after it. So competition, absolutely 100%, fantastic for any team.
Dan, somebody asked me recently, would Christian Pulisic play if there was a commercial viability for Chelsea here in the United States? And nothing could be further from the truth, unfortunately. All those players that the lads have mentioned are going to only play if they're playing well enough to earn a spot in the team, because there can be no sentiment in this business, particularly not in the Premier League with the billions involved, the Champions League places, getting back to the top in England, all the things that go with it, Frank Lampard trying to enhance his stock, keep his job. So all these guys are only going to play. Anybody who thinks anyone's going to get in this team because they might sell a few jerseys here and there is living as the phrase I love in cloud cuckoo land, because Lampard knows he's under pressure to close that gap, to get Chelsea back to the top. Abramovich will expect it. He's gone out with the checkbook already, and he's given them Timo Werner, one of the best forwards in European football, and he'll expect results. So none of that front line or any other player in that Chelsea team will play next season or beyond unless they're deserved of a place in the starting 11. It's as simple as that.
Don, Chelsea 5-2-1 to finish top four. They're 5 points clear now after the results that we've seen over the last couple of days. Looking good for it.
I think so. I think they've got to improve when sides go really deep against them. I think when you look back at their results at Stamford Bridge, I mean, Bournemouth beat them 1-0, West Ham beat them 1-0, Southampton beat them 2-0. So when sides go really defensive, like Villa did today, and they struggled for, not in terms of, you know, winning the game, but they controlled the game, especially in the first half, but they need to put teams to bed, because the Premier League, no one goes away in the Premier League. You know, you don't often, you know, have five, sixes and sevens. The top teams maybe do on occasions, but with this young coach in Frank Lampard and the young players at Chelsea, they need to mature and they need a little bit of confidence, and that will come. I always think Chelsea are a better side once they take the lead. They relax more and they become more confident.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. You can put your phones down now. Just a reminder, Craig and Don returning on Extra Time today. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. Everyone in Italy has now played 26 matches. That's after those two games today. Significant results as well. Atalanta, still a lot of fun to watch after a 4-1 victory against Sassuolo. But we start with Inter's win against Sampdoria, which closes the gap on Juventus to 6 points. How would you sum up Inter's performance today, Gab Marcotti?
Well, it was a case where I thought Inter were devastating for long stretches. Could have easily scored 3, 4, 5 goals. Instead, they only got the 2. And then, because Inter are Inter, they end up conceding a goal. And at the end, you know, there were a little bit, there were some jitters. You could hear, if you were watching on TV, you could hear Conte shouting his lungs out. But in the end, they took the game home. And so, if the real Inter is the one that we saw earlier, then things bode well. And, you know, 12 games to go is a lot. And it's enough to make up 6 points. Although they really need to make up 7 points because, of course, Juve have the head-to-head. So I'm not ready to call this a 3-point race just yet, Dan, but we're not that far off unless Juve start playing better.
If they are going to close the gap, they need Romelu Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez to score goals, both, of course, on the score sheet today.
Yeah, and both looked sharper than they did in the Coppa Italia. Christian Eriksen, I thought, was pretty instrumental as well in setting up one of their goals. And also, let's not forget Candreva, who's been playing some phenomenal football as well. And now you're not going to get that from him every game. I don't think he's capable of playing every game. But that's the good news going forward. He rotated in midfield. We saw Gagliardini in there, who's, you know, not great, but didn't do any damage and contributed some heft to the midfield. So in that sense, you know, it's looking promising. Lukaku now up to 18 goals on the season. Took a knee to celebrate his goal as well, as was expected. So I think, you know, it's a question of, we all talked about keeping Lautaro focused. I don't think it's as simple as that whenever Lautaro plays badly, it's because he's thinking of Barcelona. And whenever he's playing well, you know, he's focused on winning a title with Inter, doing something important with Inter. I think he showed today that he certainly has impacted it, and he's not saving himself for Barcelona should that deal ever materialize. It's more of a case that he has ups and downs because he's a young player and he's a human being and he's a footballer.
Gav, it's weird being across all these different leagues because obviously Bundesliga ends next week. That's it for them. There's still a lot to go. We've still got, what, a third? Like 12 matches remaining in Italy. There's still a lot to play for regarding that title race.
You're right, Dan. There's a ton to play for. If you look at the Serie A schedule, it is the most jam-packed schedule precisely because they have to get through all 12 games. I think inevitably fatigue is going to play a part. You're going to see, I expect, a lot of rotation, a lot of disjointed football from certain teams. We still haven't seen a whole bunch of teams, including Lazio, of course, who are just 1 point off the top. So I think it's really, really tough to call. It almost feels like, you know, it's a new season starting, except some teams are coming in with a bit of a handicap or a points penalty, if you will. But it does feel as if we're starting from scratch. I mean, Sampdoria, too, just to give you an example, you know, they played really well. They didn't look anything like the team that Ranieri took over when they were in last place or close to it. So it does feel like we've hit the reset button. And in that sense, it feels very different, I think, from the Premier League, or even, dare I say, from La Liga, where obviously Barcelona and Real Madrid are going head to head.
You say all that, Gab, but there's one team that hasn't hit the reset button. Atalanta, still fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. You know what? I was so sure that they were somehow, you know, that the break was really going to affect them, that their high energy style was gonna be a problem as the weather gets warmer, and you know they could have been 4-0 up at halftime. Instead, I think they were just 3-0 up against Sassuolo. Sassuolo played very, very open attacking football, and you can say that, oh, that plays into Atalanta's hands. But you know what we've seen this season is Atalanta have scored a ton of goals against teams that also shut up shop as well. So I don't think it's that easy an explanation. They really did hit the ground running. It's as if they were never away. And let's see if they can keep this enthusiasm going. But a lot of people expect them to drop out of the top four. I'm not so sure if this is the spirit with which that you know they're going to go and face these remaining 12 games.
Juventus then in action tomorrow, as you mentioned. These games come thick and fast. It's a game that's live on ESPN Plus, Gab. What's been the fallout? Who has been taking the brunt of the criticism after that poor display in the Coppa Italia final?
Well, look, obviously Sarri's taken the brunt of it, which is understandable because he's the manager. Although, frankly, you know, you can pretty much take your pick because the forwards were all, I think, to a man, poor. And the midfield's been all season, you know, it has been one of the main issues, one of the main weaknesses, especially with Miralem Pjanic, another one who people say his head's been turned, or maybe he's just not playing as well. Maybe he's not as good as we think we thought he was. The interesting thing now, I think, for Sarri is people talk about how deep his squad is and how many options he has. The problem is having a deep squad, if you don't necessarily trust your players or if when they come in, they play badly, that's not going to help you much. So it's a case for him of getting Ramsey fit just so he's got another body, another alternative, keeping Bernardeschi fit, making sure Dybala is capable of playing 2 games in 4 days without getting overly tired. And I think one of the single biggest discriminants is this Juve team needs to have a center forward, a real center forward. They have one in Gonzalo Higuain. He's got to get fit, and he's got to take up minutes because with Higuain in there, it allows you for Cristiano Ronaldo to play his natural game, and then Cristiano becomes a lot more effective and he can carry you, you know, more often than he has been.
What's been said about Ronaldo, Gab?
I'm sorry?
What's been said about Ronaldo?
Well, look, he was obviously poor in the final. I think a lot of people, though, accept the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo playing as a center forward is not a good idea. It's not a good idea because he doesn't open up runs for the midfielders breaking into the box. It's not a good idea because, you know, he takes a lot of punishment lining up against two center backs. And, you know, do you want Cristiano at 35 years of age getting kicked all game long? Probably not. It's just not his game. And I think the understanding is that he needs to go back to playing, you know, where he has been, where he's a de facto center forward in some ways, because, you know, he doesn't track back and he doesn't, you know, go all the way wide, but he always starts from that wide position, cuts inside and shoots on goal or pops up at the far post. And he does that, you know, about as well as anybody in the world. The funny thing with Ronaldo too is, and I think this has probably hurt him a little bit, is the whole time during the lockdown, you know, you look at his Instagram feed and there he is running all over Madeira, and there he is in his weight room at home, and, you know, with his shirt off, and he looks so fit, looks so fit. He's not match fit. He simply isn't. And, you know, it's unfair to expect him to be with the type of body he has. But I think what it tells you is that, you know, whatever work people were doing at home or sessions via Zoom or whatever, every player's body is different. And I think what's pretty evident is that Cristiano Ronaldo we saw in these first two games isn't the Cristiano Ronaldo in terms of fitness that we saw earlier this year.
Gamal Cody, as always, thank you very much. As I mentioned, that game between Bologna and Juventus live on ESPN Plus tomorrow. That's at 3:45 Eastern. Preceding that on Plus, it's Fiorentina against Brescia. Lecce against AC Milan is our feature match on ESPN. And then there's a lot of Italian matches to come over the upcoming days. Four on Tuesday for you, three on Wednesday, including Atalanta against Lazio. What a banger that should be.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
But well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much. Who's been on? We've got Gav, Frank, Craig, Don, Stevie. By the way, for more Craig and Don, be sure to stay tuned, as Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Oh, of course, the first question.
Just before you start,
go
Don,
on.
Just we've all got to sort of wave our... you see that?
We've got
to wave our phones around, like Stevie did on the show, because apparently somebody's told him if you do that, somebody will think it makes you look intelligent, and you've got half a brain.
You don't know what's going on that man's head. YouTube will be excited by this question. Does Christian Pulisic deserve to be in the Chelsea starting lineup, Craig?
Right, what American soccer journalist sent that in? well, it is a fair shout, to be honest, and... you know, he is arguably their best option in that position. We saw Loftus-Cheek play there today, but he's more of a central midfielder, and he's, I think he's stronger in that position. But absolutely, I don't think he's far away from playing. He took his goal well. There is an argument that in the next couple of games, particularly with him coming off the bench and making a difference, they'll get a start.
What's Don going to say, Craig?
Yes, he's going to say Frank said he's shy and he needs to come out of his shell a bit more and he should play. And I was talking I was talking to Frank at the Super... What was it? The Super Cup, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Hold on. I've got a text in from Frank. Hang on.
Yeah. What's it saying?
Yeah, love you.
Stop mentioning me.
Yeah.
Stop texting me. Go on then,
Don. Stop bothering me.
Pulisic.
No, do you know what his text is?
What?
Frank Lampard's just sent a text and said, "Who's this?" I've lost my phone. Who's this?
Christian Pulisic, starting 11, Don?
I think so. I mean, I like him. I think he's terrific. I think he offers something different. And when when we talk about Frank Lampard putting his own stamp on this Chelsea side, all of a sudden now, under Frank's terms, he can allow to say to people like Willian and Pedro, if he wants to show him the door and sell them on, make a little bit of cash. He's got unbelievable options. I think if you're asking me who's ahead, Christian Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi, I think it's Christian Pulisic. I think he's different to what he's got in that position. He's quick, he can take people on. You haven't really got too many players that can face defenders at 1v1 and take them on. I think he's a terrific player. He's only young, needs time to settle, but every time I watch him play, I think he's got severe ability.
What's that strip behind you that this show done?
Everton. I thought I'd put it on because we were chatting Merseyside Derby.
That's Everton, blue and yellow.
Yeah, waist strip. But Neil Satis, this is the optimum.
1-to-1 went bankrupt, didn't they, after you wore that?
I don't know. You tell me. You guys have got all the cash.
Don's first season with us, and when he was on probably around about November, December, we were talking about Leicester and West Ham, and he said that West Ham would finish higher than Leicester, he felt, since then.
No, it was earlier than that in the season.
Was it earlier?
He went early.
Which then leads us to the Don, will Hammers stay up? They were terrible. When was that, yesterday?
Yesterday, I commentated on the game against Wolves. It was men against boys. I mean, when I saw the lineup for David Moyes and I seen the squad that he had, I mean, Lanzini, not good enough, not strong enough. Philippe Anderson was missing all game. I mean, Pablo Fornals, I think he's a decent player when he's confident and when West Ham play well, but they were miles away from Wolves. It was like watching, you had two sides, an under-16 side against men. And if you think where Wolves are, pushing for a top six position or even higher, you can see where Wolves are going. West Ham at the moment are nowhere near it. They are miles away. So they've only got to hope, I think, West Ham fans, that the three worst sides than West Ham, I think, in my opinion, Norwich are doomed. I think Bournemouth are doomed. And it's going to be up to Aston Villa or maybe Watford to try and save West Ham's blushes.
I think they'll only stay up, Dan, because of others,
yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. And I think that's what Don's saying. I don't think West Ham have got enough to do it for themselves. So I think because I don't think they're good enough. And I think the squad's better than what we're seeing, but I don't think they're clearly not organised enough and good enough to get the results needed. They're going to be reliant on the others almost losing most of the games. And that's not a good position to be in.
I mean, their best two players yesterday was Declan Rice, who played centre-half, and Mark Noble, who's a holding midfield player.
Which of these has the most mobility, Craig? Harry Maguire, Olivier Giroud, or an actual cruise ship?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, Olivier Giroud is a very successful career.
He's a World Cup winner.
He's a World Cup winner, and his record for France is almost, and I haven't got it in front of me, but last time I looked, it was almost a goal every two games, in quite a lot of games. So, you know, he's done the business for Didier Deschamps and others. He's an option. Harry Maguire is a very good footballer, coming out with the ball, a bit like John Stones, in a sense. He's supremely talented, sees a pass, does all that, and he's a good defender when the ball comes into the box. But I think he's been caught out quite a lot, what I would say, flat-footed and square. And that's where he struggles. When you get him backed up one-on-one, he gets himself a little bit square and he gets turned very easily. So that's a concern. But I wouldn't, you know, at the end of the day, he's a professional footballer playing for a very big club, and he's earned himself a really big move. He's played in a World Cup semi-final. So we should remember these things when we're comparing professional footballers to cruise ships, as it is.
You've been on a cruise before, Don? I imagine you've tried to blag your way on the way you are.
No, not my cup of tea. I can't imagine that. It's not for me. If I imagine you have, though, Dan. I can see you on a cruise ship.
Of course.
Well, apparently Frank Lampard was on a cruise once, and he came out of his cabin, and Don was there. He went, "Cruise!"
I got the room next to him.
By the portal. Don, given that you played for every team in the British Isles, what team did you enjoy being a part of the most, and who do you support?
Well, my team's Newcastle, always has been. I stood on the Gallagher end when I was a youngster. I think I enjoyed my time at Everton because I was club captain and I had a responsibility, and I was a little bit older and I was a little bit wiser. When I was at Liverpool, I was young, I was a teenager, and I was just loving life playing for Liverpool. I enjoyed the nightlife as well. That was the culture at the time. So I think out of all the clubs, where I thought I performed best was the shirt behind me, Neil Satis Nisi Optimum.
Hey, Dan, I can't get that out of my head, mate. It's like Frank Lampard's taking a cruise ship, right? He's taking a cheap room without a balcony, clearly. And he's got a porthole. He's got a porthole, and he just goes for a little swatch out the window to see what the waves are like. And then just at the last moment, this week, up it comes. It's like something from Jaws.
It's bloody up. He's back. Since Don is mates with Jody and Frank and has sources at Chelsea, are they planning on buying centre-backs? And so which ones are they targeting and who's likely to leave?
I don't think that is on their radar. Maybe a left-back. I'm not sure what's happening with Marcus Alonso because he's a wonderful player when Chelsea play a three and he can play as a wing-back but not defensively in a four. So I think they're pretty settled there. Rudiger's good. Christensen's decent. Young Tomori looks a real star for the future. So I wouldn't have thought that would be an area on the pitch he should strengthen. And in my opinion, I think you should buy a number nine. Now, I know they've got Tammy Abraham and I know they've got Giroud, but if you're going to compete at the very highest level and try and win the Premier League and try and win Champions League, I always think you need a striker, the elite strikers, the world-class strikers that are going to get you between 25 and 30 goals a season.
Timo Werner can play there, though, can't he, Don?
He can, but in my opinion, he's better off the left. He can play there. I've seen him play there for Leipzig and Germany, but it's a different role. I think probably Frank's going to use him off that left-hand side, cutting from out to him.
What do you make of him going to Chelsea early?
Timo Werner?
Yeah. Didn't he have stayed to play for Leipzig in the Champions League?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan. Me, you and Stevie were talking about it last week, and Stevie could see it from Chelsea's point of view. But if I'm Timo Werner, the time that you spend at Leipzig and you've battled all this way to get them into the top four and title contenders at one point, and then you get them deep into a Champions League, I'd want to finish the job.
What's the point? It's only going to be one game. They're going to get knocked out anyway. You never know, do you?
You don't know that. You don't know that.
I do know that. I do know that. I've been watching them, right? Trust me. I've been watching them recently since they came back after the lockdown. Right, none of the teams have been able to even lay a finger on Bayern Munich or even get close to them, dropping points willy nilly. They're not going to win the Champions League, so I'm not going to get injured, right? And I'm not going to scupper my move to Chelsea. And Chelsea have probably told me that. So do you know what, Leipzig? You can do one.
Wow, Craig.
That is selfish.
Well, you're off on your Leipzig winning the Champions League. You're
like, but what if it was 12 months ago and Dele Alli was going to Bayern Munich and then went to Bayern Munich instead of staying with Spurs for their Champions League run? Would it be the same? Would it be, yep, okay, off you go.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, it seems to be one for one and one for the other. If it was 12 months ago and there was some sort of pandemic then and Dele Alli was leaving Spurs, everyone would be in uproar, wouldn't they? How could he leave? Where's the loyalty? Why isn't he with them to the Champions League? Well, Timo Werner's doing exactly the same to Leipzig.
But I don't get your comparison, Dele Alli to Bayern Munich.
If that was happening, it's a hypothetical argument.
Yeah, but hold on. Timo Werner is playing for a team that has got not a hope in hell of winning the Champions League, and he's got a big move to Chelsea coming up.
You would have said Spurs wouldn't have had a chance, wouldn't you, of winning the Champions League?
That's like saying Harry Kane should have left Tottenham before the Champions League final because we're never going to win it.
They didn't have a chance of winning it. They got in the Champions League final and they got pumped.
But at the quarter-final stage, just we said, oh, they're not going to get past Ajax. They did that. Not going to get past Manchester City.
It's an absolute stupid comparison because every single Tottenham player would jump off the ship and swim to shore to go to Bayern Munich. So don't give me all that.
I'd be on that cruise ship. By the way, if they're swimming, I'd be on that cruise ship. Just had a look over. Well, Frank,
You'd be at the porthole again, looking for Frank. It's Frank there.
Frank and Jody, save them too.
All of a sudden, ESPN FC is promoting loyalty in sport. Oh, let's have loyalty in sport.
Who would you say first?
Do you not want to win the Champions League, though? If you're Timo Werner, do you not want that medal?
Well, but he isn't getting one, and unless he goes down the shop and buys one, he's not getting one.
Don, who would you say first, Jody Morris or Frank Lampard?
Oh, that's a ridiculous question. That's the most outrageous question you've ever asked me, Frank Lampard.
What? Wow, take that, Jody.
he'd swim in with Frank, doing the backstroke, obviously. Then make sure he's got a pulse and then straight
kiss
back out for Jody.
And the kiss of life.
Ah, yeah. Even though he's conscious, you give him the kiss of life.
Yeah, definitely. Frank, come here.
Have we figured out what games the Premier League is borrowing its crowd noise from? They just need to ask a refund, even if it's from themselves. So they're getting it from, I think, EA Sports. I think that's what they're doing from the video game. But it seems
somebody's trying to pipe in the exact noise that correlates to a particular moment, and that's quite difficult, rather than being a little bit more generic. And I think maybe they're trying to just overcomplicate it a little bit, but you know, it was a bit up and down today, certainly in the Merseyside derby.
Yeah, the Bundesliga seem to have it nailed on, Don.
Yeah, they do. It did sound a little bit naff when it first came in, but I'll tell you that the sound guys and the technicians have worked it well, because every Bundesliga game that I've watched, when the fan noise has been pumped through the TV, it's been first class.
Why don't the Premier League?
I mean, why would you leave a Bundesliga team with crowd noise like that to go to a Premier League team? why do that? I mean, Dele Alli wouldn't do that. Dele Alli wouldn't leave with the crowd noise and go to Bayern Munich.
Definitely not.
Boys. And I've got 3 months more of these stupid comparisons to give you before the season finishes.
Oh, that's it. We're done. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow for more. What's playing? What's tomorrow? Manchester City, Burnley tomorrow.